welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. Oh, yeah. So today, this morning early, was the Gemini solar eclipse. It is the realm of liberating language. And Gemini says, we live in a conversational creation, con with, verse turning. We're all turning together. You know, it is a solar eclipse is thought of as a deep punctuation mark, which poses to all of us, what do we choose to be a voice for? What are we willing to be messengers for at this time? The Sun and Mercury are what's called combust. They are the same degree, and that degree, metaphorically, is a labor demonstration. And we go, okay, we'll play with many of these things. Those of us geographically blessed on the East Coast by the 17-year cicadas, we welcome them as the voice of the ancestors. Everything call and response. So let us all be messengers for and listeners to that which connects us. So, more than perfectly, we welcome the return of great conversational ally, dance partner, friend of all life, Miguel Rivera, who collaborated with our mentor, Mahout friend, Fran Quinn, to craft translations of their beloved poet ally, Humberto Acabal, Quiche Maya poet from Guatemala, recognized globally as a voice for indigenous Guatemalan poetry and art. And Miguel remarks on the untimely death of Humberto in January 2019, all I am moved to add at this time is that his poems are needed even more today, given the monumental task we have ahead of us in restoring elegance, beauty, eloquence, grace, and civility to the world in the years to come. You can order this wonderful book at tiachucha.org, tiachucha.org. So Humberto Acabal, born 1952, a fellow water dragon, hello, in Momostandango, help me out in a moment, is a Quiche Maya poet from Guatemala. His poetry has been published in French, English, Estonian, Scots, German, Arabic, Italian, as well as in the original Quiche and Spanish. His book, Guardian de la Calda de Agua, or Guardian of the Waterfall in English, was named Book of the Year by the Association of Guatemalan Journalists and received their Golden Quetzal Award in 1993. In 1995, he received an honorary degree from the Department of Humanities of the Universidad de San Carlos de Guatemala. And Miguel, returning to, excuse me, show, was born in Guatemala, moved to the United States at the age of 13. Music, taught drumming, many conferences. We cahooted together at Robert Bly's Great Mother Conference, played with Danger to liberate heroes from gangs. Cahoots with, right, Robert Bly, James Hillman, yep, Ed Tick, yep, sure, Danny Dierdorf, ancestor, there we go, Martin Prechtel, and many more. In 2001, in a collaboration with Robert Bly, he translated and published an English collection of the poetry of Humberto Acabal, Poems I Brought Down from the Mountain in the United States. And now we have In the Courtyard of the Moon being published this month, last month, there we go. Miguel has too many credits to list here. He is award-winning supervising sound editor for film and TV. He's member of the Guild of Future Architects, an organization dedicated to collaboratively shaping a kind, just, inclusive, and prosperous world. And it goes on. There we go. Welcome, Miguel.
Good afternoon, Carolyn. Good afternoon.
Yay. So let us invite in Jaunty Pluck so that we are as conversationally fun as we were backstage. There we go. That's the assignment. But I love that you said mystery has no formula, which is fun. So here we are, right? It's a highly fluctuating field of language and metaphor, of focus and mystery. So mystery has no formula. Is that do we get to go free range?
Yes, let us try it that way. We'll see what we can conjure up in this hour of of trading, basically, metaphors and also relationship to the elements around us, definitely working with the fire, the water, the earth, and the air, right? So
And then just, you know, again, as you know, it's a democratic show. You can go anywhere you want at any time. But I also loved what you'd said backstage about Robert quoting William Stafford or talking to William Stafford, and said, you know, how do you write a poem every morning? And William Stafford said,
Well, he said, lower your expectations is what he says, mm-hmm. which I think is really interesting because expectation, a lot of times, a friend of mine used to say, expectation is premeditated resentment. So this is really important. Expectations a lot of times create incredible obstacles for us to be able to get to what we need to do. So, yes.
Right. And yeah, I like to say expectation is the dance partner of disappointment. Right. And that form of non-useful melancholy, right? But willingness and availableness is the dance partner of life. So, yeah, everybody here, we are willing. We are willing and we are available. So, yes, and so there's many places we can go. But I love Robert Bly's forward to a previous edition. He said, these poems speak for a people still close to the earth, whose language allows us to enter a world that still recognizes the divine aliveness of nature. Akabal says, my poems have the moistness of rain because they've been brought from the mountain.
Yes. He was one that was, for many Native people, including my teachers, there is no objectification of the world around us. You know, they are all, it's part of the family. So you have to look at everything as some sort of a relative. You know, and like any family, big family gathering, whenever you go to a family reunion, there's a lot of strange-looking relatives that speak strange languages, eat weird food, and dress weird, but they're really cool people. And this is what we have to do is get to know our relatives, right? So the tendency in English a lot of times is to objectify the world around us because this is such a noun-based language, culture. So we forget that there's actually living, breathing, energetic entities that we have to be in relationship. And that only, not only is it reflected to in our relationship to the world, but also in our relationship to ourselves. So we objectify part of ourselves, which creates a big polarization, not only inside of us, but it's reflected in the common, you know, in the community at large, in the world at large. And this is what we have to uncouple from in order to be able to move forward and be able to affect change in order for us to survive as a species. Yeah.
Right. Well, no, and we look forward to many languages. You speak many languages. I'm embarrassed. We're just Americans. We are ridiculous people who often only speak one language. But we want to be better, because you will be able to give us some of Umberto's poems in Quiche and Spanish and English, which is wonderful. And then just before I toss it back to you, you know, yeah, everything can be liberating or imprisoning, you know, language, words, everything. So to help English out of its objectification, its intrinsic kind of imprisoning quality, I like gerunds. Any word that ends with ing, liberating, you know, inspiring, doing, it helps it verb a little more. But right. Where would you like to begin? I know we have a number of poems.
I just wanted to tell the story of how we got to this point, you know, and basically one of the things that's really interesting to me is my sister, I've been living in the United States for 30-some-odd years, and we went to Guatemala in 1995 to hang out for Christmas, and my sister gave me a book, Guardián de la Caída de Agua, which you mentioned before. And when I opened it up, I had this instantaneous, like a Harry Potter kind of moment where I was transported back to my childhood immediately. And all of a sudden, a world that I had totally forgotten existed opened up. And I got connected to in a very visceral way to the elemental forces that shaped my youth. So I realized this is really critical in terms of restoring part of myself, myself that I had forgotten because of the travels, moving from feeling alien, not only growing up in Guatemala, but also moving to the United States and getting alienated by the transplanting of myself to a totally different culture. And this connected me to the earth immediately. I was transported. I could hear the volcanoes erupting, you know, I could feel the rain, the birds singing in the mornings, all that stuff, the smoke of the woods, the barking of the dogs, the marketplaces, everything. And I realized this is really important. There's a viscerality here that people need to feel connected to, you know, for themselves. So on the fly, we were translate the poems, and Robert said, we got to do this. So I made arrangements and had lunch with Umberto at a cafe in the central square in Guatemala City. a year later, and then he said, "I will think about it." I wanted to know if he was interested in supporting the publication of an anthology, and he said, "I will let you know." And about a month later, I got a fax from him saying the fire said yes. So we got permission from his grandfather's, and all the way translated to the fire, and said the fire said yes. And so here we are 30 years later, you know, basically with another volume. And what's interesting to me is I was promoting the first book at this little street fair in LA called Eco Maya, right? And in Guatemala, when I was a kid, everything that was native or Maya was totally despised. And here I was in the United States of all places, 30 some or 40 years later. And the one thing that brought us all together was the fact that Maya culture was bringing all these immigrants and refugees together in a very interesting way. And this festival took place over Easter weekend. And what I found really interesting is that I felt that the resurrection, ironically, was not something related to something that was created in a desert halfway across the world 40 years ago, but that the earth had seeded itself in us. And it was calling us to wake up to the fact that minerals and elements that made up the land are calling us to respond to. So I realized, oh, that's the resurrection that's taking place. We are getting reconnected to the land by what it is, by our relationship through these words and these songs, these poems, you know. So this is really the translating of these poems to me is like a directive also for us to be able to tune ourselves to the song of the world, the song of the land around us, of the elements, the voices of the lands. So if I may, we can share some poems if you want to get started. So
I do, but I can't help myself, because you begin the foreword in a very important way to weave the context, you know, from whence, what underworld does an important voice arise from, what horror, right? And just, you are reminding us of Guatemala in 1956 to 1995, you know, how a poetic voice emerges, you know, guiding from the cruel faux underworld of humans who were missing the whole point of life. And I'd said to you backstage, you know, my childhood friend Anne Roosevelt, her father was Kermit Roosevelt, who overthrew the democratically elected government of Iran and installed the Shah, overthrew Mossadegh, right? And we were just little girls, but I did know. I said to my childhood friend, I think we were like 5 or 6, I go, "Your father reminds me of a large rabbit in a bathrobe with a gun," because I got it. These were wimpy tyrants who caused so much harm. And so I know that when Kermit Roosevelt got back, the Dulles brothers were like, "Oh, right, on to Guatemala." And Roosevelt said, "No, I'm out. Iran was enough." And so the Dulles brothers were like, "On to Guatemala." Right. So there's
right.
All of this is the bones of the dead are speaking to us always, but absolutely, maybe even especially now.
Oh, yeah, but that means that we have to reconcile with that, you know, and you can either choose to get revenge, right, and an eye for an eye, or you can move forward and realize that at the end of this is you have to uncouple. That's why what's interesting, what's happening now is the buzzwords, right, and the collective art, decolonization, right? Abolition, all these things. But if you stay with a certain level of consciousness, if you don't reclaim yourself or re-sanctify yourself as a human being, as a member of a community of beings of all species, right, and elements, we're not going to get there, you know, because we get hung up on the politics, right, or the dialectics of identifying ourselves as separate from the rest of the world. And what's important to me in this poetry in particular is it allows us to connect to the world. And I'm not saying his poetry is the only one that says that. You hear it everywhere. If you listen to native teachings from all over the world, they are all saying the same thing. We have to think of ourselves as all coming from the same source, we all come from the same void, right? From the same darkness, the original state of the universe before anything was manifest. We all come from the same soup, right? So.
Right. Yes. And he does carry the language of delving into the poison, whereby to be diagnosing and brewing and proffering the antidote.
Yeah.
The liberating language of collaborative kinship. Yeah. So wherever you want to go with whatever poem is.
I'm gonna start with an invocation where it says,
"Please."
It's called "On My Knees" or "De Rodillas." De Rodillas. ¿Por qué viniste a interrumpir mi vida? ¿Quién te envió? ¿Cómo has podido meterte en mi corazón? Ya no puedo arrancarme de mí. Ya no puedo vivir sin tu aliento. Ni siquiera puedo ponerme de pie. Poesía, ya ves, estoy de rodillas. On my knees. Why did you come to interrupt my life? Who sent you? How were you able to get inside my heart? I cannot tear you out of me. I cannot live without your breath. I cannot even stand up. Poetry, I am on my knees. He's really invoking the essence of the art to come and basically be the transformative element, you know, to be in relationship to everything, right? So a very interesting point. And then he says also this, para quienes. Para quienes no hablan nuestras lenguas, somos invisibles. For those who do not speak our languages, we are invisible. Right. So there's a sense that in particular in Guatemala, native peoples have been basically invisible since the arrival of the Spaniards in 1523. And they're ignored and they're not validated as having anything worthwhile to say, only to be exploited. That's a very simple way of looking at it, you know. So now we realize in these times ahead, maybe there is something in there that's really intrinsic that they can carry a piece of the puzzle, you know. So this one's called Riquij. El sol, and I will read it in Quiché first and in Spanish and then in English. Riquij. Riquij kunin riv chu ushol rishot ruk riv hanalik sha karach kuril kasko chupan re rikachoch ka sakmaki karecham pakurilo ruk riv chach riv usakil che sivabach sak riv kamevayil. El sol. El sol se mete entre tejas con esa terquedad de mirar qué hay dentro de nuestras casitas y se pone pálido al ver que con su luz es más clara nuestra pobreza. The sun. The sun gets in between the roof tiles with that stubbornness of wanting to see what is inside our little houses. And he goes pale on seeing that our poverty is more obvious in his light. Guatemala is the beautiful thing about Guatemala is there's a lot of suffering in the country, but people are indomitable. They will not give up in terms of living in beauty and elegance and eloquence, you know, and how they cook, how they dress, how they are, and they just will not give up. This one is called El Canto Viejo. Yeah?
No, you go. Is this the old song of the blood?
Yes, that one. Yeah. El canto viejo de la sangre. Yo no mamé la lengua castellana cuando llegué al mundo. Mi lengua nació entre árboles y tiene sabor de tierra. La lengua de mis abuelos es mi casa. Y si uso esa lengua que no es mía, lo hago como quien es una llave, lo hago como quien usa una llave nueva y abre otra puerta y entra a otro mundo, donde las palabras tienen otra voz y otro modo de sentir la tierra. Esta lengua es el recuerdo de un dolor y la hablo sin temor ni vergüenza, porque fue comprada con la sangre de mis ancestros. En esta nueva lengua te muestro las flores de mi canto, te traigo el sabor de otras tristezas y el color de otras alegrías. Esta lengua es solo una llave más para cantar el canto viejo de mi sangre. The old song of the blood. My mother's breast did not feed me Castilian when I came into this world. My language was born among the trees and has the taste of earth. My ancestors' language is my home. And if I use this language that is not mine, I do it as one who uses a new key and opens a new door and enters another world where the words have a different voice and another way of feeling the earth. This new language is a memory of a pain, and I speak it without fear or shame because it was earned with the blood of my ancestors. In this new language, I show you the flowers of my song. I bring you the taste of other sadnesses and the color of different joys. This language is only one more key to sing the old song of my blood.
Yeah, no, let's savor, you know, because it is, yeah, the language, you know, and again, imprisoning or liberating, so powerful and beautiful. And it reminds me, you know, P.L. Travers, who wrote the Mary Poppins books, not the horror movie that she really despised, but in the books, Mary Poppins, who's really a not to be missed with shaman, and she's entrusted with the children and the twins. And the twin babies, they can understand the language of the wind and the trees and the birds and everything. And she says to them, you know, you're going to forget. And they were like, no. And she goes, no, you're going to forget, but there are ways to remember. And there's this very poignant, powerful moment in the book where they forget, right? And I think your dedication and Umberto Acabal and all that we kind of honor right now is what... exactly what you said and what that poem said, remembering the language of kinship before humans, before colonialism, before when it was to and fro, you know, in this conversing, right? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. Oh, totally, because basically we have claimed ownership of the land or of the earth when in fact it should be the other way around, you know? The earth owns us, right? In Seattle's words, right? The earth does not belong to man. Man belongs to the earth. And he says it many, very eloquently in many of his poems. You know, I'll get around to some of those in, if we get time, to the first volume, you know, but definitely, yeah.
Mm. That's great. Yes, and you know, in another one that you may or may not want to go to, wherever you want to go, but pain blooms in the face, you know. Oh. If the bones of the dead speak, how can we, the living, stay silent? That's so now, that, you know, and just in the astro-mythology of now, this is so strong for now. We have all these Gemini conversationally accessible intelligences known as planets, you know, and they have a very spicy, quirky angle to Pluto, the deepest, darkest underworld things. And so it is the capacity for the dead to speak, the bones of the dead to speak, and to what you're doing and what you're doing with Umberto is to make deep, deep things conversationally and linguistically available. And that would be, you know, you are perfect. You are perfect for now. That's what we want to do. Does that resonate with yourself?
Absolutely. I mean, it was interesting because there's two things. One thing you mentioned is the cicadas emerging from a 17-year
dormancy. Yes, I love them.
I love them. And then also, I've been fascinated with this volcano in Iceland. I stay up and watch it all the time because it has this like a 9-mile shaft into the core of the earth. And for some reason, that's coming out. And this lava has to get to the ocean. It's like... And I realize there's some alchemical thing that the earth is doing. And this is not the only volcano that's blown up right now, but it's the most amazing. There's the one in the Caribbean. Guatemala has 5 volcanoes that are all active right now, which is really unusual. Stromboli, I think, is active in Europe. And there's another volcano in the Republic of the Congo that's also going. And I'm going, what is the... So something deep has to be acknowledged and seen. And I think part of it is we have vilified and aspects of the dark that I think are intrinsic to our nature, and we have to reclaim that. And because we've ignored it or vilified it, it keeps wanting to be noticed in some form or another, you know. So we have to engage with it, you know. It's part of us, you know. It's like cutting off part of your body, saying everything below the heart doesn't exist or is not valid. And I think that the plumbing down below is just as critical as the plumbing above, you know. They're complementary, right? When people talk about life and death, they think the life is the opposite of death. And no, birth is the opposite of death. Together, birth and death compromise the cycle of life. I mean, that's the way I understand it. You know, for us, it's a way of participating willfully, being, and for us, I mean, the human arrogance of we've taken ourselves out of the cycles of the earth, you know, out of the food chain, really, to put it bluntly. And this is, it's time that we put ourselves back in the food chain and say, yes, I want to participate. I want to reciprocate with this earth. And these are ways in which we are being called to participate with the earth, you know. So
right, and humbly, our word, you know, the word human comes from humus, from which we're humble. We're meant to be humble on our knees, the great poem you just read. And right, so yeah, when did we make the underworld a bad place? When there was a priesthood, that's when that happened. And so Pluto really is like roots, and all this Gemini is the branches in the wind. And there's an interesting little piece snippet going around in social media, which is the experiment Biosphere 2, this a kind of hubristic experiment in the desert to enclose civilization. Anyway, but they had trees, but the trees all died because there was no wind. It's such an interesting, every fact is a guiding metaphor. They needed the wind and the stress, right, to grow roots. They needed the wind and the stress, and it was probably they were picking up psychic bad vibes from the humans too, maybe. But that wind, right? And so here we have this, you know, a new allied with Umberto. It's roots and branches and wind. The language really is the wind, right?
Yeah. Okay, let me read this one. Dolor,
okay, which one?
Dolor a flor de rostro. Y otra vez la llama del recuerdo vuelve a encenderme la memoria. Con el dolor a flor de rostro, con la mirada hecha pedazos, mi gente con sus uñas escarba la tierra. Y la madre tierra descubre sus muertos y los huesos salen a gritar, a contar con voz de espanto el terror de esos días, de esos años, de ese siglo apenas terminado ayer. Y el viento desparrama el eco. ¡Ah, Camisamel! ¡Ah, Camisamel! ¡Ah, Camisamel! ¡Asesinos! 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 Si los huesos de los muertos hablan, ¿por qué vamos a callar los vivos? Que su memoria se mantenga encendida y que la llama del recuerdo no se apague nunca. No más sangre, no más dolor, nunca más. A la orilla de una fosa abierta en Nevaj, año 2000. Pain blooms in the face. Once more a flame returns and revives my memory. With pain blooming in the face, with a shattered gaze, my people with their nails dig into the ground. And the earth mother reveals her dead. And bones rise up to cry out, to tell as only the dead can, the terror of those days, of those years, of that century, barely over yesterday. And the wind scatters the echo. Ah, Camisanel, ah, Camisanel, ah, Camisanel. Murderers, murderers, murderers. If the bones of the dead speak, how can we, the living, stay silent? May the memory stay alive. And may the flame of remembrance never go out. No more blood, no more pain, never more. At the side of an open grave, Nevaj, Guatemala, 2000. Yeah.
Right. So it's very humming because the bones of the dead, you know, in Tulsa, the graves are being excavated, the indigenous children in Canada, I mean, everywhere.
Oh.
Right, rising up. Yeah.
All this reconciliation, because we have those ancestors need to be prayed to, you know? I remember one of my teachers was talking about medications one time, about what it is to take pharmaceuticals, you know, 3 or 4 different prescriptions or 5 or 6 at the same time. And he said, you know, the medicines get in there and start fighting with each other. You know, what are you doing here? No, this is my job. No, this is my job. Bam, 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 bam. And the fight is so awful between them that the body goes, hey, what happened to me? And kills over and dies. And I thought about it, and I realized, wait a minute. If he's talking about pharmaceuticals, what about ancestry inside of me? I have at least 3 big ones. You know, I have Maya Quiche, I have Spanish, which already is the legacy of the conquest alone. Then I have Polish. And just by having Spanish, I have, you know, centuries of Carthaginians, Phoenicians, Romans, all up and down the Iberian Peninsula, and God knows what else, you know, Muslims, everybody. So you realize, oh, I have to pray to them too. Because and what I've learned over the years, I've been participating in Native ceremonies for 40 years, right? Sundance, Vision Quest, Sweat Lodge. And the prayer is always goes back both ways. It goes into the past, those that preceded us and those that will follow us. So everything is like a ritual of not reconciliation, but reenactment, a ritual of blessing, right? So you have retroactive rituals. So part of it is understanding. Yeah, so blessing both ways, you know. So this is the
legacy. Reciprocal blessing. We're going to take a very, very short break, our traditional Taj Mahal music, just very short break, and then we will return with the return of Miguel Rivera and his splendid translation of Humberto Acabal's book, which we will honor and read more from. It's the Courtyard Interior? Wait, what is
it? In the Courtyard of the Moon.
And you can find out about it at tiachucha.org, and we will be right back after this very short break.
She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She showered his head with quasars and made his tortoise cry. Chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Ooh, chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Telegraph my indigo sky ship, make its voyage long.
Now get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, and our more than perfect guest is Miguel Rivera, and his recent translation with our buddy Fran Quinn as a mentor mahout over to one side, you know, in the presentation of this latest book of the poet Humberto Acabal. So here we are back here, you know. And again, we can go anywhere you want to, but I was, you know, inspired by you researching all over the internet, you know, for Humberto Acabal. And I found his a long video on his translation of the Popol Vuh. Perhaps you could take that on next project.
Actually, that was one of the things that he handed me the book and he said, do it. Translated, which to me is a hell of an intimidating task to translate the Popol Vuh.
Yes.
Because it's been done many, many times by serious academics, and I'm going, but I think one of the things that they haven't done is approach it from a ritual point of view as a ceremonial opening to understand how to pray to the earth, you know. So that's I've been waiting. My goal was to go live with them for 3 months or 6 months or something like that and really take it in that way. So I will see how to make it happen. But I think it's critical, especially with the way, it's funny, I was writing about this morning because we use the word mythology in such a way that I feel it's devious, you know, how it undermines the truth that's hidden. The mythology to me is really critical. There's a lot of truth embedded in mythology and ways to understand how to be in relationship to ourselves and to the world around us, you know. And by saying, when people use the word myth, they imply that it's already a falsehood or that something is not true. And I think that's such a terrible disservice to a tool that's available, and especially in myth, you know, to be able to understand what's happening with us, you know, and how to connect ourselves to the world. So, yeah.
Right. And also, you know, as we know that traditional cultures symbolically embedded their science and their actual knowledge of botany and everything in their myths and fairy tales.
Right.
Many, many
yeah.
great examples.
Yeah.
And so what happened when the uninitiated, unsupervised Mars team came along, they were like, we don't want these myths, these fairy tales, these symbolic languages like astrology. We heap scorn on that. We just want science, right? So it stripped science and knowledge of its mythological moral cocoon that it be used in dedication to collective well-being. And that's really on our work table today. I mean, really now it's like the re-wedding of intellect and mythology and compassion and science and fairy tales and myths all brewing back together, because that original you know, mean-spirited trick of the reality police to render people less effective in their dedicated hearts, going, no, no, the power of metaphor, the power of language, you know, this is crucial. And it, and that's one of the blessings that you, you bring to many dedicated, ardent people who are working for a better world, right? I mean, you bring language and play and working with gangs, right? Mm-hmm. To, you know, what we said backstage is I said you and Martine in the play, because you are strong enough to be gentle, and that liberates people hiding under a tough guy act, right?
Exactly, yeah. But it's really understanding that there's a need. We have, one of the things that I've learned in the work that we do, especially with the youth, is that the youth needs tempering, right? And in this culture, we have substituted wounding for tempering. So everybody goes, oh yeah, this is an initiation, but it's not. It's a warped ritual, you know, and this, and you cannot substitute one for the other, you know. So you still have to go back and remake something in the proper. You have to recontextualize it in the proper way so that you keep, you get informed right, you know. So a traumatic experience is not an initiation, not by a long shot, and that's confusing for a lot of people because they think because they've been through something horrible, they're already initiated, and that's not the case at all whatsoever. So yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Youth needs tempering and invitation. You know, it's like you work so much with ritual in many places, wonderful, crucial, nothing more important. You know, and we know, I mean, we're the first several generations that have not initiated, you know, our, you know, you work with Ed Tick, you know, he says, you know, returning veterans, the odyssey is a manual, it takes 20 years. Yeah, there's a whole series of steps that need to be taken. But also the essence of initiation really, in a sense, was we need you. We need your unique contribution to build Stonehenge, to do this thing, to work with the earth. We need you. And and so that invitation, which is, in a sense, one of the primary qualities of art or poetry, right, to serve as a humming invitation, you know, come, you know, hum in resonance and step forward and engage in serious play. I mean, much of the poems that you translate are, you know, harsh. The terrible violence of Guatemala. But always the antidote of going, you know, back into, yeah, he says, the Umberto says, the laughter of the waves is the foam. It's like, oh, that's so charming. Right? To animate the world in its charming poignancy to, you know, how could we be otherwise? How could we be cruel in the face of invitational beauty, right? So, yes, composting cruelty. So there's so much, you know, going on. And absolutely, go anywhere you want. But, you know, perhaps we should also mention that, you know, Pedro Castillo has won the Peruvian election. The image today is, you know, labor organizing. And we go, and already, of course, nuance. We want nuance. People going, he's not as good as you think. He's not socially progressive. He's not for gay marriage. And we go, nuance team. It's a miracle. And again, that idea of cooperating with everything is that, you know, we go, we'll work with it. It's a miracle step, you know, and we discourage the bad, we encourage the good, going, congratulations, and let's go, and here you go. I mean, is that your thought about that? And protect it from the U.S. coup. There we go. That's right. And any blessings you want to put on the Peruvian election?
I think it's what it does is I see it as something that's basically disarming the old rules of the oligarchy. I mean, Latin America is still stuck in the colonial era. I mean, as much as they're modern, the power structure hasn't changed at all since the Spanish came, you know, in place. And this is what we're renegotiating, you know. And you have to go about it slowly and make sure and determine steps in order to ensure change. I figured out in 1972, mind you, that it was going to take about 150 years to course correct the damage inflicted on the land by the conquest. And in a conversation that I had with a dear friend of mine, where we have a project in Guatemala starting right now, dealing with trafficking, child trafficking, right? To get into dark, if you want to talk about dark territory. But these are the things that we have to address. But he figured out it would take about 300 years to course correct correctly, right, to undo. And I think it could be accelerated depending on how the consciousness is changed. But this thing in Peru is a step in the right direction. And we have to be patient and cultivate dialogue. And I think that instead of judgment, you have to invite curiosity and dialogue, you know, start figuring out how to sing with each other, how to dance with each other, you know. So
And call and response, which is really curiosity. It's like, yes, if we could throw judgment, which is imprisoning, into the we want diagnosis. Judgment, in, critique is good, into the cauldron and ladle out curiosity. You know, it's all the myths. You know, when you're in the underworld or when you meet anything, you know, always ask the demons their story. What's your story? And how shall we cooperate? How shall we spiral out of polarity to do something witty? And language is part of our magic in that way. Just to go back, I hope you do translate the Popol Vuh, because when I was listening to the translation of Umberto Acabal speaking about the Popol Vuh, it's on YouTube, and I was like, oh, I've read the Popol Vuh, twins, very important, many, a long time ago. But as I was listening to him in my imperfect understanding of Spanish, plus there were, you know, subtitles, but I go, ooh, I would trust his translation, right? And it's sort of like your nearest exit may be behind you. It's like, let's go way back, you know, when there's unsupervised Mars and cruelty and CIA and horror and violence and all of that, you know, unsupervised Mars, uninitiated Mars, let's go find the Venus. Let's go find the art of that region. And the Popol Vuh creation myth, you know, and again, just listening just in a little bit to Umberto Acabal's explaining it, and as you said, and I just want to toss it back to you a little bit too, which is, it's a ritual thing that it, do you feel it may contain the medicine that begins to heal the horror that's been inflicted, you know, on Guatemala? And
oh, absolutely, there's no question about it, because I feel like there's a reciprocal relationship with the earth that's embedded in the stories there, and that has been totally suppressed in the people, you know. And those, that story has to be told. Those stories have to be danced, sung, and it's the same. I think it's the same for lands all over the world. The same where there's been the impact of colonization, and that goes back to pre-Roman times, if you want to get serious about this, you know. And I didn't realize that. I heard an interview with some guy from Britain a couple of months ago, and we was talking about how the Roman conquest of Britain had decimated all the indigenous peoples in Britain. I'm going, oh yeah, so that's where that, how far back that goes, you know. Okay, that's good. That means that they have to, the Picts or the Ordovicians or whatever they were called, you know, they suffered the same thing 2,000 years before. So this is, we're not, this is an old story that needs to be dealt with and addressed in such a way so that it doesn't keep repeating itself. But I think the Popol Vuh is vital. It's vital, especially to the people of that particular part of the world, you know, definitely. Yeah.
Well, Umberto Acabal is really handing you the baton.
In a way, yes, he did. And I was nervous about that. But I realized, yeah, why not? Why not? It's a good position to be in, you know. So yeah, absolutely. And we all benefit.
The last radio show we did together, I think it was called, you know, If Not Now, Then When? Let's all do what we came to do. And so it's like, right, I think now, you know, it's come to this at last. We now have to do what we want to do. It's like, oh, all right. Okay, there we go.
Yeah.
But you were saying about, you know, the Popol Vuh, the creation myth, the Mayan creation myth, the reciprocal blessing, the dance and the song. And I think the first time I really kind of, maybe one of the first times we kind of really met, and it was at Robert Bly's Great Mother Conference, but I always remember this. It was so great. You were authentically tending the sweat lodge, but authentically tending the story fire. And I go, ooh, what? And and you said, I mean, I'll let you say it, but you said, this is a place for the characters in the story to hang out when the storytellers are not telling their story on stage.
Right, yeah.
I just love that. I love that so much. And is that something, are we doing that now? Is radio maybe a story fire where characters can come hang out and gather their wits, you know, when they're not being spoken?
I feel it. You know, a lot of times when I do these interviews, I will light sage or cedar or something, put a prayer in there, because I feel like any way that we can get this information out is critical, because it'll save a life somewhere. A bullet will, you know, will hit a wall instead of a person. I know that, you know, in the LA in the 90s, when I started running sweats for young kids, you know, that did not want to be in the hoods anymore, I knew that by them coming to pray that night on the land, somebody's life would be spared. I knew it, you know. And so by willingly undertaking, understanding where we're at, things will change, you know, and that's like a sacrifice on their part, but it's a gift also, you know, and being willing to participate and to see what's really there, what's beneath, you know. Like he says, the sun gets in the, on the roof trying to see what's in our houses, you know, and then he goes pale, but the truth emerges, you know. So, yeah.
Go ahead,
ask me.
No, I was saying you may have poems lined up on your knees, but that's good. No, I'll just turn you loose. But I was super charmed also by Cuando la noche es fría. Do you have that cute one there?
Oh, when the night is so. Let me see where is that.
It's page 64.
Page 64.
But never mind me.
Yeah. Right. I'll dig it up. I'll tell you which. I'll read something.
It is language and animating intimacy, yeah. In all these
one
small
about
and
bats,
large.
I find the other one. Okay. Los murciélagos y yo. Los murciélagos y yo esperábamos la llegada de la noche para jugar con las estrellas en el patio de la luna. The bats and I waited the arrival of the night to play with the stars in the courtyard of the moon. That's the one about, that's basically, we got the title of the book through that one. So let me see if I can find page. You said 64, right?
Well, never mind me. We're dancing all over. I'm finding ones I like this one and this one and this one. And that's why, let me just, well, you feel free to rummage. Let me just remind our dedicated citizen listener participants here that you can get this book at www.piachucha.org. So you can go there, and then I love the Spanish next to the English. I love reading the Spanish, going, oof, no. Both, you know, in the cross-pollinating that that Miguel and Humberto are so dedicated to. But I'm also, yeah, it was. Wherever you want, just anything, whatever wants to come through you is completely great.
Cuando la noche es fría, los tecolotes encienden luciérnagas para calentar sus patas. When the night is cold, the owls light up fireflies to warm up their feet.
Charming and profound is one of my favorite flavors, but that's really great. And then I won't trouble you to go early, but I was also very charmed by Color de Sol, Color of the Sun. Do you have
Color de Sol? Yeah. I have it.
I met in Yucatan. I met a jaguar in the jungle.
I do have it. I started putting
it's these page in 84.
Great. I love it. There we go. Until you love it. Color de sol, yes. El jaguar es un animal de color de sol con parches negros. Su cola se larga hasta la orilla del sueño. Este animal a veces llora. Color of the sun. The jaguar is an animal the color of the sun with black patches. His tail stretches out to the edge of the dream. Sometimes this animal weeps.
Yeah. The presence, the food of all of our fellow citizens, you know, the gaze of the animals, the feeling. And I didn't actually see the jaguar. I felt the jaguar. I was at a cenote out in the jungle in the Yucatan by myself. And, you know, I used to say, you know, the Yucatan, it's not a vacation. It's a near-death experience because I would always find myself with those. But and I was like, oh, it's a cenote, a deep, dark cenote in the jungle. Nobody around. I have to go in. Into the dark, dark black water. And as I did, I felt a gaze upon me. It was like, it was very strong. And it's like, hello. And farmer walking in as I walked out, I said, wow, why are you carrying the rifle? And he goes, para el jaguar. I'm like, oh, I shot that thing. And it's also like, you know, as we were saying, democratic animism, you know, the animism, it's not a belief, it's a practice of good manners. And there are people who complain about the cicadas. I love them. And I was sitting down to have a little meal. Cicada, you know, landed right opposite me, and the waiter is like, shall I drive it away? And I go, no, it's my dining partner. Hello. Hi, how are you? What's up? You know, to and fro. I'm very impressed with your people. You know, prime numbers 17 and 13. That's so impressive. You know, and there was a make a well for you, and may we not pave over anything more so that you can come back in 17 years. And these conversations are available, I think. Profundity in conversational vernacular with everything, you know, the tree, the cicada, the thing. Hi, what's your story? And how can we are ill-mannered rogue species, and we've done terrible things. We'd like to cooperate. We're available.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Yes, and so let me give you as much time as we have, really, for wherever you want to go. I love... Yes, wherever you want. I'm checking off the. I also like. I bark.
Well, I gotta make sure that I read the ones that you like too, because this is good. But I'll read you this one.
En la yes, voz. Please.
En las voces de los árboles viejos reconozco la de mis abuelos, veladores de siglos. Su sueño está en las raíces. In the voice. In the voices of the old trees, I recognize those of my grandfathers. Guardians of the centuries, their dreams are in the roots. So that's deep. Another one, canto. El abuelo, de la mano, lleva a su nieto a saludar a los árboles, a platicar con ellas, a acariciar su piel, a oler sus hojas, y los árboles cantan sus nombres. Song, the grandfather takes his grandson by the hand to greet the trees, talk to them, feel their skin, smell their leaves, and the trees sing their names. Yeah. So yeah. There's a certain sense of us, you know, I remember making a prayer. I've prayed in front of trees for many, many, many years. And at one point in time, I felt this kinship, and I could feel the sap of the tree as my blood, and my blood as the sap of the tree. They were one. The fluids, however different they are biologically, right, chemically, alchemically, but it's the same. It serves the same purpose, really, you know. In some forms, I realize, oh, this sap and my blood are one. So there's no reason why I don't feel, why I should feel disconnected from this other being, you know. So anyway,
right, and I think part of your, you know, offering and encouragement, you know, is that we be humbly on our knees with our grandfathers, you know, increasing our respect for the intelligence of all of our fellow kin, the trees and the thing and the, you know, all of that. And friend of show, Diana Beresford Kroger, friend of trees, says, you know, walk into a pine forest, you always come out smarter, because the pine aerosols, you know, stimulate our brain, you know. If you're lonely, sit under a weeping willow tree, and the salicylic acid will heal your sense of kinship, you know. You know, ladies, you know, if you squeeze a walnut, you know, it's green outer skin, it smells delicious like lemon. And she goes, and rub it on your forearm, and it will prevent breast cancer. And we go,
oh, wow.
Yes, let's try all these things. but... You know, again, it's the big thing that's been hovering for decades is, oh, humans will we find the thing that heals us before we kill it? It's like, come on, team. So, we're at that moment. Let's find the thing. And the poets are our guides that resonate in our heart to find that thing for which we want to enter into a contract and be a voice for. And this is a powerful time for each one of us to go, with whom do I want to converse, and what am I willing to be a voice for, you know, in the court of the human world in some way. It's kind of wheel and deal, coyote, trickster time. So, yes. And I'm just going for language and things too, but there is also I barked. Do you have I barked before you?
Oh, yes. Where is that one? Sin nombre. Oh, no, wait a minute.
I have it.
I was going to read that one, and I did something.
Oh, good. It's page 86. There we go.
And this page what?
It's page 86.
Page 85. Antes yo ladraba. I have it. Antes yo ladraba. Y ya no recuerdo en qué sueño se me olvidó esa costumbre. Ahora hablo. I barked. I used to bark and I can't remember which dream caused me to forget. Now I speak.
Well, barking is good too. And may we all have our own words for the divine. You know, it's a wordplay time. I like approaching the divine, going, "Oh, spirit of woof that animates the universe." You know, here we are, or what? Playing with profundity and playing with language so that it's an intimate partner and not necessarily received or imposed, right? There we go. So, yeah, well, this is delight, and I like that Umberto's handing you the baton to bring the magic of the Popol Vuh alive. That's really great. And then, you know, wherever you want to go in our, we're in our last minute, but I want to give it to you. You know, you spoke about resanctifying the self as being in a larger community of beings and the sacred dark. And if there's any 1 minute thing you want to do about
that. First of all, I just want to acknowledge the fact that a lot of this work is, I want to say thank you to Fran Quinn, yes, in some form or another, is responsible for all that. He forced me to start working on this new anthology for many years. And we would sit down every May at the Great Mother and hammer out these poems. And there's a lot of them that when Berto was here in 2001, we started working on this, especially the European, Japan poems.
We're on our way out. I can hear right. I can hear wonderful, wonderful board up, Jose Gonzalez. Thank you forever. Thank you, Jose. Bring up the theme music. Thank you so much, Miguel Rivera, and the wonderful work of Umberto Acabal and Caroline Casey, CoyoteNetworkNews.com. And we will reconvene next week. Woof, woof, woof.